Parents have the duty of modeling their children upon the image of Christ, their divine brother. The grace of fertility gives them something of the heart of God and the hands of God to fashion from day to day a masterpiece, a child like unto his child. 2. Marriage as an offering to Christ indicates the collaboration parents must bring to these graces. This offering also takes three principal forms. First of all, the form of cooperation. The graces of marriage remain sterile without the cooperation of husband and wife. To cooperate in this sense means, basically, that couples must love one another ever better and ever more. Any effort they make to achieve greater intimacy, harmony and happiness in their home is to cooperate. From the wedding day onwards, love and grace work together. Grace invites us to a deeper love and a deeper love disposes us for greater grace. Secondly, marriage as an offering to Christ is a form of commitment. In the radical sense of the word, sacrament means an oath. In antiquity it referred specifically to the soldier who bound himself to the state for life. In the Christian context, a sacrament binds us to Christ. In Christian marriage, a couple commits themselves totally and irrevocably to Christ. Their bodies, their children, their homes, their possessions, their all belongs to Christ. They are bound to Christ as closely as they are bound to themselves. Thus their love is truly Christian only insofar as it is directed towards Christ and insofar as it endeavors to return to Christ the love he bears towards them. Thirdly, marriage is a form of consecration. It is not enough for couples to cooperate with grace, it is not enough that they commit themselves to Christ. There is a third level of conjugal sanctity, that of consecration. Marriage inaugurates a consecrated life. That is to say, not only a life that comes from and lives by God, but which returns to Him without cease, glowing with gratitude, praise, and repentance. On this role of consecration, the authors write beautifully. The Christian couple must offer to God, not only their own love but all love. And from circle to circle, from depth to depth, this must indeed embrace the entire universe. 3. In an attempt to define marriage as a mystery, we reach the highest meaning of marriage. Mystery in the fundamental sense in which it is used here, means the life and operation of God. Marriage, as a mystery, evokes the mystery of Christ and His Church. This symbol runs all through scripture and mystical writing. Marriage evokes this spiritual reality in four ways. First, as a mystery of intimacy. The great mystery of Christ and His Church is that all souls be gathered into the unity of the Father. Conjugal life reflects that ideal by seeking total union at every level of life. Secondly, as a mystery of suffering. It was upon the cross that the Church was wedded to Christ, it was upon the cross that mankind was redeemed. Marriage must reflect that painful union. When couples suffer for, through and by one another, they begin to perceive love's depths. Thirdly, as a mystery of fertility. The fruitfulness of marriage resembles and evokes the inexhaustible fertility of Christ and His Church pouring forth love and grace upon mankind. Fourthly, as a mystery of glory. The Church, through the trials and sufferings of time, will know the joy and peace predicted by the apocalypse. Christian marriage must reflect that immense hope. Couples must proclaim unflinchingly that the joy they know at present is but a faint promise of the happiness that will be theirs in heaven. These parallels are not arbitrary or makeshift. They are rooted in the very nature of marriage and the Church. For both are rooted in the mystery of love. When a husband loves his wife as Christ loved the Church, when a woman loves her husband with that tender veneration and that loving submission with which the Church honors her head, they accomplish the redemptive work of Christ, they are united in the same love that Christ has for His Church. This mystery is indeed great. Marriage not only reflects it, it also contains it. For where love is, there also is the secret of the world. There also is the mystery of God. This mystery is further elucidated by a comparison with the Eucharist. For in this sacrament is found an infinite gift and the fullness of life. Marriage's inferiority to the Eucharist is one of its greatest honors. For no other sacrament approaches that gift and that life as does marriage. Questions. I. In what sense is the sacrament of marriage a presence of Christ? 2. What do we mean when we say that grace purifies marriage? 3. How does marriage reflect the mystery of Christ's death and resurrection? 4. How does the grace of marriage affect children? 5. What are some practical ways for married couples to cooperate with grace? 6. What is the greatest responsibility of married couples? 7. Compare marriage with the union of Christ and His Church. Draw up parallel points. Discuss. I. Marriage is not a grace of comfort and ease. 2. The first act of conjugal sanctity consists in believing in grace. 3. Married couples are bound to Christ as totally as they are bound to themselves. 4. Marriage inaugurates a consecrated life. Chapter 6. Vocation to Sanctity. Synopsis. Marriage can be briefly summed up: it is a vocation to sanctity. Father Carr writes, "There are too few men and women who give themselves over to the living logic of their vocation to find the charity of God, indeed God Himself, beyond and within the beautiful consecration of their love." Sanctity is the obvious will of God for all of us. Sanctity must be understood as the soul united to God and separated from everything that is not of Him. It is continuous progress in charity. Baptism initiates us in this way. Marriage adds still further responsibilities. It also gives the strict right to graces of state. These graces enable couples to draw closer to God together. They furnish new sources of energy and higher motives for living a full life. Most couples could make more progress in sanctity if they sincerely desired to become saints. There is a fear and a mistrust on the part of many that holds them in mediocrity. There is a prevailing attitude that love of God is somehow in conflict with marital love. Another serious impediment to sanctity is a lack of generosity on the part of married couples. They manifest a form of escapism that never permits them to answer fully God's call to sanctity. At the origin of every separation between husband and wife is a separation of each from God. On the other hand, if they desire sanctity, and give themselves generously in pursuit of it, they cannot not become saints. This remains true even of unhappy homes. True even of broken homes. In those cases in which one of the partners has lost the faith. Through sorrow and discouragement and unhappiness, the grace of the sacrament is at work. One simple axiom provides the secret of conjugal sanctity: gift of self. God gives Himself ceaselessly. That great gift must be returned by creatures. There is no other law of sanctity. Marriage offers a unique opportunity for this vocation. In no other vocation do occasions for self-giving present themselves in such varied multiplicity. Questions. I. What is the will of God for married people? 2. What should it mean to a Catholic couple in today's world to know they have a right to the infinitely powerful graces of the sacrament of matrimony? 3. Point out the implication of the law of acceleration applied to the spiritual life of marriage. 4. What is one to think of married persons who look for roads to sanctity outside of their own state and life? 5. What are basic facts of the marriage vocation even for unhappy homes? 6. What is there to be said about a marriage in which one of the partners makes a gift of self and the other does not? 7. Explain God's part and man's part in the living out of the marriage vocation. Discuss. I. The day of their wedding is an entrance into a life of sanctity. 2. Husbands and wives merit and expiate for each other. 3. Sanctity is stability. 4. Married couples are prisoners of love. Chapter X. Fidelity in all things. Synopsis. Marriage has already been compared to the Eucharist. This chapter endeavors to throw further light on marriage by comparing it with the sacrament of baptism. There are important differences between the two sacraments. But there is one very important similarity. Both sacraments are based upon the deep-seated human desire for happiness. Both sacraments suppose human incompleteness. Moreover, the sacraments of baptism and marriage have a similarity of expression. In both cases, consent is required. In one case, consent to God; in the other, consent to another human being. In both sacraments, the recipient swears fidelity. Thus, marriage and baptism share the common element of faith. It is not precisely the same kind of faith in the synopses and discussion questions. Two sacraments. But these three comparisons between the faith we ask in baptism and the mutual faith that binds a husband and wife together will help us understand marriage better. I. Baptism marks our entrance into the Christian way of life. We profess belief in God. But the object of our faith is obscure. We do not see God. Neither the highest mystical experience, nor the most penetrating insight of the philosopher, nor the sincere faith of believers can lift the veil from God's face. Our knowledge and love of God is measured by the intensity of our belief. In marriage, the spouses swear their faith in each other. In this case, the object of our faith is physically present. But there remains an unseen and obscure quality even in this faith. The two persons united in marriage remain two. The deepest love cannot render them totally communicable to each other. In truth, the more they know and love each other, the more they must believe in each other, in the other's incommunicable reality, in his hidden richness and individual personality. Faith in God as faith in marriage demands belief of those who would enter either way of life. 2. A second level of comparison is more concrete. For both faiths suffer from the effects of sin. Our faith in God is constantly contradicted by evil. Our intelligences and wills are always the prey of disorientated passions and false idols. Our faith in God is a perpetually menaced faith. Grace can be lost and we can break our baptismal vows. Marriage is a victim of this sin also. Between married couples, sin inserts a principle of division that works against the union they strive for. Sin sows the seeds of egoism, doubt and conflict. The same perverse power that makes faith in God difficult, makes marital faith difficult. This is true in such wise that when grace is lost, the union between spouses is thereby weakened. Every sin is a sin against love. 3. On a third level of comparison, we see that both our faith in God and marriage are exposed to the attacks of a secular society. Saint John warned the faithful to keep themselves from idols. The Church warns married couples that their fidelity in all things cannot survive the onslaught of the world without the grace of God. As A. M. Carr says, with a great number, unconsciously perhaps, a shifting of values, compromise, cowardly actions and a kind of subordination of their ideals to the ready-made judgments of social environment, dissolve the basis of mutual faith. These comparisons are merely sketches. But they do point up the dangers that beset faith, whether in the believer or in the soul of the married person. The only effective resistance against these dangers is total cooperation between God and creature. Grace, on the one hand, and the intelligence and will of man, on the other, are convoked to that meeting ground where salvation is worked out. Questions. I. What do baptism and marriage have in common? 2. Note some important differences between these two sacraments. 3. Draw up the author's triple parallel between baptism and marriage in your own words. Can you think of some other points of comparison? 4.